Welcome to the Healing the City podcast. The following podcast is a ministry of the Village Church in Tucson, Arizona. If you wish to support the Healing the City podcast, you can go to the show notes, click support the show, and you can become a subscriber for $3, $5, or $10 a month. This will help offset the hosting costs and continue the ministry of Healing the City podcast. Also, if you wish to support the show, we really encourage you to rate us on Apple and Spotify and other places that podcasts are listened to, and give us a good review. Thanks. Hey, welcome to the Healing the City podcast, Sermon Remixed, John 7, 1 through 24.
It's a little it's a sleepy morning.
Mm-hmm.
Preached by Jim.
Jim Roth, the Roth clan.
Possibly the most theologically educated person at our church.
Yeah, I think so.
At least formally.
Formally, yeah, because he has a seminary degree.
Yeah.
Most formally educated. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else with seminary degrees.
At least not. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Yeah, this is a relatively unique position that we're in right now because the person who actually preached the sermon is not with us.
Yeah, and neither is Michael.
Neither is Michael.
He said, "Go ahead and do the podcast."
Yep.
So, let's give a quick summary of the text. So Jesus has just left the spot where he made the, where Peter made the great
proclamation
that there's no other place to go,
yes,
to find eternal life but Jesus. Then we shift into the Feast of Tabernacles, which is the Feast of Booths, which is a big time
booths. Which just sounds great on audio when you go.
Yeah, I'm sure they're all appreciating that. Yeah, so this is a festival that involves building lots of tents outside with a roof that is got some holes in it so you can lay out and see the stars. And it is a festival of provision,
yep,
celebrating how God provided for the Israelites in the desert.
Yep.
And Jesus's brothers are like, dude, you need to go up and make good on these messianic claims.
Make yourself known. Yeah. This is the time.
Because they don't, like, I mean, I guess he wasn't that enough miraculous for them to be like, as a kid, you were just normal.
Well, I mean, I think the whole idea is, like, you're going up to, well, if you're going to say you're doing these things, then you got to go to Jerusalem.
Right.
Like, Jerusalem's the place where, yeah, you're going to actually get the following.
Yeah, and make and become king and, yeah, get ready for this deal. And he's like, yeah, you guys have a time, and that's any time.
Yep.
But I have an hour, and that hour is not yet.
I almost get this sense of, like, They're sensing, like, hey, you could do this now.
Yeah, this could happen right now.
Like, you have enough momentum behind you that if you went up to Jerusalem now at the Feast of Tabernacles, like, it would happen. People would follow you.
Yeah, definitely.
Which you see in the chapter before with when they're out in the desert and he could see that they were gonna make him king. So he snuck away.
Right.
Like, after his miracle, they're like, let's make him king. Like, they can see, like, hey, you've got momentum, just go do it now, go to, right, Jerusalem, claim it.
Yeah. So they go up, I guess they're like, well, fine, you're not gonna go. So they go up, and then he goes up and he stays hidden.
He goes in secret.
Yeah, he plays very Jedi-ish,
which he does a lot in John.
Yeah.
He like sneaks in and out of crowds and,
yeah, he's a little bit more Jedi like in, yeah, the Gospel of John than in others.
No, it is. It's very much like, I'm gonna put my hood on, yep, sneak away from this place.
Right. But halfway through, he starts having a conversation with people,
mm-hmm,
to the point where he's like talking about why they want to kill him, and the crowd's like, "You're insane, man. Nobody wants to kill you."
Yeah.
And but the people who want to kill him know that he's talking to them.
Yeah.
And it's over this concept of Sabbath and, yeah, how he healed a man on Sabbath. And,
yeah,
That's work.
That's work. You can't do that.
Well, in particular, well, there were
particular rules about how to heal and what you could do on the Sabbath.
And he instructed the man to carry his pallet, and there was So he goes into Mosaic law and other things.
Well, the whole idea being circumcision is supersedes the law.
Right.
So if there are things that supersede the law, then, you know, if you can circumcise a baby on the eighth day because that's when you're supposed to circumcise the baby, and that happens to be the Sabbath.
It circumvents.
It supersedes the law. So therefore, why is it okay to heal the baby and bring them into the community?
Right.
And make it possible for them to be a part of community life, but it's not okay to heal a whole man
and bring him into
community and him into family life.
Right. And he ends with a very, I mean, it's not really ending, but we end our spot with a very stark thing where he says, don't judge by appearances, but by the heart, I believe is, I don't
but
know.
But by... make a correct judgment.
Or make a correct judgment.
That's make right. a correct judgment.
Yeah.
Make a righteous judgment.
Yeah.
Is, I think, the better translation. Yeah. Like, it is very much, you're judging by appearances, by the face, by the countenance, by what is before you, and you're not bringing your judgment in alignment with what is right, with what is good, like with God, basically.
Yeah.
He's saying, you're making your judgment. You're supposed to be making, like, God's judgment and bringing yourself into alignment with God.
Right.
Which goes back to what he's saying earlier in the passage, which is, like, you're not aligning with God. You're teaching your own thing rather than teaching what is what is God.
And he, I think, so Jim highlights that presenting what is right and good can only happen when you are wanting to do the will of God. And so when you want to do the will of God, then you are just offering what God's will is, what God has instructed you to. But if you're doing it for your own thing, then it's just about you.
Yeah.
And whatever you get from God is still about you.
Yeah.
Because you're not actually intent on doing what God wants you to do.
Yeah.
Or say.
Well, Jim also brought up this idea that judgment is, we have this idea in our culture that, you know, judge not lest you be judged,
right,
or whatever.
Yeah, from Matthew.
So, like, the idea is that we think that we are not supposed to judge others, and he brought up this idea that we judge each other, and we're actually supposed to. We're just supposed to do it in line with God,
right.
So that judgment is something we step into.
Right.
And what he tells them is, you're supposed to judge.
Right.
You're Israel's leaders, basically. But your judgment is not in line with God.
Right, which is, like, you know, if you judge others in line with God, both God's righteousness and God's mercy, then you end up... that's the judgment you receive.
Yeah.
This is in the line of God's justice and mercy.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I enjoyed the sermon a lot. I enjoyed where we're headed. I think, I think that Jim didn't spend a lot of time on it, but the Feast of the Booths, I like the idea of how that chapter kind of opens up with the provision piece.
Like, yeah.
That this is that God provided. And that is the dialogue that's happening in 6 and continued on 7, is who's actually providing the words for Jesus.
Yeah.
And Jesus is continually saying, I don't do the will, my own will or your will. I do the will of the Father who sent me. And so there's this, that, like, Father provides. And all he's providing the words for Jesus. He's providing the healing for the man. He's providing, like, this is a complete... pointing to the provision of the Father.
Yeah.
Which I like that. I like the this dependency thing. There's like a dependency theme that.
Yeah, and John really moves in and out of all of these, the festivals.
Yes, he does.
and uses them to draw out things like that. Out the provision of God and where are you finding your
life.
Your life.
Yeah, because the bread of life is the right before that, and then we jump into the tabernacle of booths. We're gonna head into the festival of lights. We're going Passover I think hits three times in the Gospel of John.
I think so. Yeah. Because it hits maybe just twice.
I think it's three.
I think it's three. Yeah. Well, the last like half of John is basically just him teaching at Passover.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Right.
And really fun. But yeah, we'll hit the rest of seven.
Yep.
Next week, which
Michael's not here, is going to do that, I believe.
Yes.
And then Susan will do...
Yes, and then Sue's doing the beginning of eight.
Yeah. And then you're finishing up eight?
Yes. Eight. The rest of eight is the light.
Right.
I am the light.
And then I have Easter. Is that how that works?
Yeah. Which is our next break. So we talked about this a few weeks ago, which is that we took sort of a break. We did the first bit of John, and then we took a break.
Right.
And now we're doing another bit of John, and then it's not really a break. It's a break in the flow of like chapter, 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 chapter.
Right.
Because we're jumping actually to a different part of John.
Right.
But that
we're celebrate Easter.
We're a few weeks out from that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And if people are wondering, like, well, why isn't Eric preaching? He hasn't preached in a while. Well, apparently we forgot. Even
we said it. We set it all up with the sermon.
I'm supposed to be on vacation.
Oh man,
who knows? I have yet to take a vacation.
It just snuck up on us.
Yeah,
March, because we had so much going on in February.
Yeah,
we got to the end of February and we're like, oh, it's March.
Yeah, I don't know what. Yeah, so I haven't even planned anything.
Yeah,
usually vacation is well planned by the Siepen clan.
Yeah,
so who knows? We may end up taking vacation another time.
Yeah.
But this has been we'll see how this goes without me preaching. There's still, oddly enough, plenty of work to do.
Yeah. Well, and it is interesting having Jim come and preach and have a different voice come in.
Yeah, it was nice.
I thought it was really rich and to hear him do it. And to have to do it twice, too, to come back and listen to it in the evening was really helpful. And,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting passage. This is sort of like this section of John is always like post after six, like 7, 8, maybe just 7 and 8, 7, 8, 9 are sort of the hardest parts of John for me to like kind of grab onto and figure out what's happening. I think the emphasis on like the festivals is really helpful to draw out.
Yeah,
all of those things. The narrative and stuff.
You know, it's funny, just since we're reflecting on Gospel of John, I don't have problems with this section. I always run into John 17, and everybody's like, the high priestly prayer.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's just I read John a lot as a kid, or I'm just like, dude, your prayer is too long and too repetitive for me. And I have never quite gotten over that part. I'm like, okay, Jesus, we get it.
Yeah.
This is a very long prayer.
Yeah, I think the section for me that it's like the, well, 8, which is, or 9, which is a passage I actually get to preach on in a month or two, is actually this whole, like, Jesus heals a blind boy.
Right.
And then Jesus is not, like, in the story for a while. And it's like the Pharisees trying to figure out who healed the boy and interrogating his parents. And like, there's this whole section where you're like, okay, where's Jesus? I thought this book was about Jesus. What's happening here?
Like, yeah. John likes to give a little bit of backstory.
He does. He like jumps into other things and it's really interesting. So yeah, this section, like 7, 8, 9 is like the hardest for me in my story has been the hardest for me to like really kind of hold on to and figure out exactly what Jesus is doing.
Yeah, you know, I feel like this is just way non sequitur, but it made me think about it when we just think about John writing. One of the things that I don't think people realize is that the makeup of disciples, like how we understand the disciples and the way, say, our most recent like deep dive that people are looking at, the Chosen, that understanding of disciples is so, I'm pretty sure, very inaccurate. Because you first have John, just if we think about, he's writing this masterpiece.
Yeah.
It's not the best Greek, but it is a masterpiece.
Yeah.
And it's a piece of literature. This man has some kind of education. So I think it's funny when the rulers are, I get John and Peter stand up in front of them. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, it's evident that these people are not schooled. They may not have been schooled in the rabbinic traditions.
Right.
But they were schooled in they had to be schooled at some level in the Greek traditions, because they understood more of what's going on than people understand. And I think we've kind of, fishermen in our world are the rough and tumble guys. And I think most men were rough and tumble guys, right? But in the first century. But also, fishermen were rich. They were upper middle class.
Yeah.
Eating fish and dragging it up to Jerusalem. And John, he lets Peter into the temple. They have homes.
They're connected in some.
Yeah.
Well, and even there's a bit in one of the Gospels, and I forget which it is, but it's a line that we kind of like, it's one of those throwaway lines that we like don't think about sometimes. But it says, you know, they're like fixing the nets and stuff. They're sitting there by the lake, and Jesus comes along and says, "Follow me." And it says they left the boats with the hired men.
Yes.
Like this is, you know, their dad has this fishing business.
Yes.
They are part of their dad's fishing business. It's not just them like going out on a boat and getting some fish and then going to the market and sell it. Like they've got multiple boats. They've got hired men who come and do the fishing. They've got people who take the fish to the market to sell it for them. Like this is a
business.
This is a business. Like they are the sons of business owners.
Yeah.
They probably were educated, maybe not in the rabbinic tradition. Yeah, they didn't follow a particular rabbi and they didn't learn that way, but they were educated. They were rich.
Right.
Maybe not like rich, but they were people well off.
Means. And then you have Matthew, who is definitely a person of means.
Yeah.
And then if you start thinking about all the women who are people of means around them, it's pretty impressive. But then you think, I think the one big one is that we have Jesus as a carpenter. And we're like, I hear pastors make the silly jokes about, oh, you know, Jesus' chair and Jesus' desk. And I'm willing to put money that Jesus never built a table or a chair. And maybe when he was a kid learning to be a carpenter, he worked on Herod's palace. He worked on, he was a tecton. He was he went and built stuff.
A skilled laborer.
Yes. And so he also probably had, or his had a family home. Like Joseph probably owned a home. Partly why Joseph was marrying this young woman, and there's this year of waiting and all that, is because of Joseph's position.
Yeah.
He wasn't just a poor guy on the corner street. You know, he had some form of income and wealth.
Which I think speaks to our perception of ancient times in general.
Yes.
We kind of just perceive everybody as like poor.
Poor.
Ah, they're just poor backwater people.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, this is actually the height of civilization.
Yeah.
You know, you got like Rome and Jerusalem and, you know, Egypt.
Yeah.
Like there's these centers of learning.
Right.
Jerusalem is a center of learning. The whole area is incredibly important. People are well off.
Sure.
There's a lot happening.
Yeah. It doesn't mean, excuse me, that the majority were poor, living in mud huts and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
Like we understand that, but Jesus didn't. Sometimes we kind of like think Jesus went down and he got a bunch of the poorest, lowly people and had them follow him. No, he had this very mixed. Yeah, there's probably some poor people in there, very mixed people financially. And he had a network, and he built a network of people.
Yep.
But his idea, I think partly this is why people were like, oh, are you going to do it now? Are you going to do it now? Because he has a network. He has a plan. He has a following. I mean, 5,000 people get fed by him. He's got at least 120 following him around most of the time. Mm-hmm. Off and on, so he's well connected.
Yeah, it's just it's interesting context especially as we go through these things where he's sneaking into Jerusalem and confronting the Judeans and having these conversations. Yeah. Like he's got part of the reason they're trying to go after him, yes, it's the law and it's the, but they're also kind of afraid.
Yeah.
Of like,
well, it's a, it's,
they're afraid of the fight that's going to come.
Yeah.
If he declares himself as the Messiah.
And there's major power struggles going on because there's the high priests and the rulers. There's the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Judeans. There's the Galileans. Yeah. You know, there's the Zealots. They've got all this like stuff happening yeah. and all these, you know, power structures that are at play.
Yeah.
And Jesus, I mean, I'd love to be like a first, like be there and just know all that's going on. It'd be very interesting.
Yeah.
But all right, well, we could talk about this forever. That was chapter 7. You should listen to
the first part
to,
of chapter 7.
Yeah, you should listen to Jim's
Go
sermon.
Go listen to Jim's sermon.
And you can use our silly commentary as help. So anyway, thank you. And you can email us if you wish at villagersonline@gmail.com or healingthecity@gmail.com and throw us a question. Thanks.